to have more than one plan, and he's got these plans in place. There are only three different options when it comes to some very simple things. Either there's one God, there's many gods, or there's no God. Okay? Now, when you look at that, two of these things that we've been looking at, which is secular humanism and Marxism, doesn't believe there's any God. Okay? Then we're going to find in the polytheism group, the new spirituality group, they believe that there's many gods. Now, Islam believes there's one God, but they got the wrong one. Okay? And we, Christians, we have the right one. Why do we know? Well, one of the things we're going to look at over the course of this study is what's called critical thinking. Has anybody heard about that? Critical thinking, learn how to think critically and all that. What you find is a lot of secular definitions of critical thinking. And Kelvin, I asked Kelvin to do it. Get me a biblical definition of critical thinking. Because he's in the middle of academia and stuff like that. He runs into critical thinking all the time. So let's do a bit of biblical definition of critical thinking. And probably next week, depending on how long-winded I am today, probably next week we're going to get into looking at a definition of spiritual biblical critical thinking. Because that's what we want to do. We want to be able to look at things, analyze things, bring things into the proper framework. Now, what we find by these other secular critical thinkers is that they've left out some important information that they'll tell you in their definitions shouldn't be left out. Okay? So it's kind of handy whenever you decide, well, we're going to critically think, but this is how we're going to do it. And then you leave out other factors and dynamics that they didn't consider. So there's either no gods, there's one God, or there's multiple gods. That's the only options you have. So you have to deal with those. Now, we were talking last week about Marxism. Where did it come from? Karl Marx, Friedrich Engels put it together in the mid-1800s. They published it and it got adopted by a lot of different countries. And they tried to bring it into the United States in the early 1900s, even having a socialist that ran for president five times in the early 1900s. Last time was 1920, and he gathered over 900,000 votes in the 1920 presidential election. So this has been going on. And just because he didn't elect it doesn't mean they haven't kept it alive and haven't tried. Bernie Sanders might be, you probably heard of Crazy Bernie. I'm trying to be nice. But anyway, he's Crazy Bernie's probably nice. But where do people get these ideas from? Well, along about in the 1960s, we find that a guy named Saul Alinsky, and most of you in here, I'm sure, have heard of this particular guy. Hillary Clinton did her college thesis on his writings, and Barack Obama wrote about him in his books. Now, he died in 1972. His education, University of Chicago, he wrote Rules for Radicals and Reveille for Radicals. So your rules to go by, and then he wrote Wake Up and Put These into Operation. Okay. Now, these are books that came about in the 60s. What happened in the 60s? A lot of us grew up then. We know what happened in the 60s. You know, when I went to school, I mean, there were certain things we did not do in school. If our boy's hair got down to the shoulders, the coach cut it. Okay? And his hair was about a quarter of an inch long anywhere on his body. So here is the coach. And he told us, when we came to football practice, our senior year, he took one look at a half a dozen of us and he said, you better cut that hair tonight or I'm doing it tomorrow. And so we did. And we just buzzed it. We had a good time. We just buzzed it all off and we looked really weird because a lot of us, you know, the Beatles were coming about. Everybody thought the long hair was cool. Okay, did that. You better wear socks to school and you better wear a belt. Okay, if you didn't, you're going home. Now, that was our legalistic set of rules, but that was for our school. I went back to the school to visit a couple of years after I graduated. And going back to the school, I didn't even recognize the school. You had to wear shoes and socks. Remember, socks are important. And there were kids walking around in thongs. There were kids with hair down to their back. There, I mean, it was a whole different world. It was lost because there was no decorum. There was no respect. There was no integrity, no honor. They had lost that, and it happened that fast. Now, where did it come from? That's because a lot of what I'm getting ready to talk to you about got into the schools, and we can thank Mr. Alinsky for that. It was said the first book, in the first editions of the book, he paid tribute to Satan, who was the greatest disruptor, the greatest radical in all history. And then I've said that before, and somebody said, no, he really didn't say that, but the earliest books did, and then he had it taken out because it became too obvious. Now, his books were about how to create a social state. Okay, how do you turn a republic, a democracy, into a socialist state? How do you do that? And this is what he said. He said, you take control of the health care. Now you got to ask, is this going on, still going on? Take control of the health care. He said, if you can control health care, you can control people. And they've been trying to take control of the health care forevermore. Prices keep going up. Insurance keeps going up. That's what happens. And it's, you know, in a free market state, it makes it a lot better. It doesn't help everybody out, but you can still help people to a degree. But you don't turn people into totally dependent on you. That becomes the problem. Healthcare, poverty. Now, have you ever noticed how some people keep making more money and other people keep making less? Poverty, one his argument was increase the poverty level as high as possible because poor people are easier to control and won't fight back if you're providing everything for them to live. So the more people you can plug in to a governmental structure, the more socialistic you can make it, the quicker. There were some people that saw such a great advantage in 2020 with COVID, of the government taking control of everything that you could possibly imagine. And it was, you know, 2020, I still remember that time because we shut down Trinity for a couple months. And Jimmy Carroll and Roger Mullard come over on Saturday mornings, and we would record the message here and then play it on Sunday morning so people could watch it from their television. Most of you in here weren't interested in masks. I wore one just until I got up here. I don't like to talk through. Talking through a mask is not a functional thing. But in some places in the country, if you're not wearing a mask, you're a heretic today. And yet, the facts and the science and the data says that stopping a COVID virus with a mask is like trying to stop a mosquito with a chain link fence. Okay? It's not going to happen because of actual size and dimensions of the virus versus the breathe and what you could breathe through the mask and all that. So if people wanted to wear a mask, when we finally opened back up, we weren't shut down very long, not like a lot of people were, and we opened back up, and it was optional. And we made it clear, if you want to wear one, fine. If you didn't want to wear one, fine. Okay? Be respectful of other people. I know good pastors that said, if you don't wear a mask, you don't love your neighbor. I didn't agree with that, but that just, nah, I don't think so. Anyway, what they want to do was make people as poor as possible. Now, I have an advantage over some people because I've been to a lot of countries where this is installed. It's socialism, communism. I have seen it firsthand. I've seen how bad it truly is. One time we visited a church in the former Soviet Union, and we visited a church, but we visited a hospital. And we walked into the hospital to visit with one of the church ladies who'd had a compound fracture of her femur. Now, that is not good. Anybody in here knows, you know, break a leg bone in half and it starts sticking out. That's not a good thing. They had her in a ward that was probably 10 feet wide, 15 feet long. And they had 8 beds in there. For women who had compound fractures of the leg. Now, these were, I said 8 beds, they had 16 because they were bunk beds. They had them stacked through this ward that was there. And she did not get, this is going to make you cringe when you hear it. She could not afford an anesthesia. So they set this bone with no anesthesia. Can we even imagine that? That's socialism. Because that's socialism, you still had to pay for something that would take ease the pain so you could get the thing back into place. Now, they used to give you a jug of whiskey and get you good and drunk until you thought you could endure it. But still, when it's available, but then everything's supposed to be free, isn't it? In a socialist utopia, that's just wrong. They want people so poor they have to depend on them. The next thing is debt. Increase the debt to an unsustainable level. Did we manage to do that? In the United States, I think $38 trillion is an unsustainable level. And some people who are in Congress, sitting members of Congress, said, we just print more money. We don't need to talk about reducing the debt. We'll just print more money. How are we going to finance this climate change thing? They only want $12 billion to do it, and they ask them, where'd they get the money? And the answer was, we just print more of it like we've always done. That's why we're $38 trillion in debt. Okay? Does that make us ready for a bankruptcy? How much is $38 trillion? There's not enough money in the world to pay that debt off. Who owns the debt? A few Class A stockholders, primarily. Some people say the richest man in the world. I don't know if he's the richest man in the world or not, because a lot of them don't even publish how much they have. Debt. They want a debt load on every human being. They want you... Anybody remember Jimmy Dean's old song, I Owe My Soul to the Company Store? Yeah. Yeah, I used to sing right along with that, just like a lot of you did. You know, that's what they want, increase the debt. Oh, how about this next one? Gun control. You know, one of the most dangerous things for a socialist is a gun in somebody else's hands. One of the most dangerous things. They want gun control. Why? So you can't fight back. It's been said that Japan didn't come on into the mainland after they bombed Pearl Harbor because there were too many guns floating around. Guns kill people. Guns don't kill people. People kill people. And they use guns. They use knives. How about MS-13 with the machetes? I mean, if people, somebody wants to kill somebody else, they can kill them. But a gun's the most effective way to defend yourself. But see, gun control to most of us means you hit the 10 ring at 100 yards with most of your shots. That's gun control, okay? That's the kind of gun control we should have, is we know how to use it. Now, gun control, though, they want to take the guns away. You know, I had a conversation with a young man from the former Soviet Union, and he said one time, he made this comment. We got on this topic of gun control. He said, you can own guns in your country, can't you? And I said, well, yeah. He says, do you have a gun? I said, oh, a couple. And he said, two, three. He said, why do you need more than one? I said, to protect us from our government is the main reason. We were probably being listened to right then. I hope it didn't get him in any trouble. But that's the main reason, that guns are there to protect us from our government. So why do they want to pick them up? Because they want to create a police state. You notice how when COVID hit, they were using this for every means possible. Some people couldn't work, and what were they doing? Increasing debt, increasing poverty. Okay. And by the way, they keep going after taking up the guns. Well, it's one thing to want to take up the guns. It's a whole nother thing to get them. Because if you start trying to get them, you're going to take them away from grandma's has got Papa's shotgun in there that he shot squirrels with and fed the family. That's what you're going to go after. And a lot of the, I hate to use the word old ladies, but a lot of old ladies could shoot a gun pretty well. We were talking about that before church this morning. My wife was a dead shot with a gun, so you didn't want to mess her. And you know what they said, the greatest shots there are by a woman under stress that has to defend herself. Yep, dead shots. Gun control. Welfare. They want to take control of every aspect of lives. Food? How about free grocery stores? Housing? Oh, you can call it affordable housing, but you start giving it away. Who they owe? Because you owe somebody, see? It's always the way it works. And income. They won't control your income. So if they put you on a set income, then they can control how much you make. And here's a big one, education. This is in his book, Rules for Radicals. You want to put a socialist state into any country, this is how you do it. And you can see this coming to pass. Education, take control of what people read and listen to. I find that interesting, because when you want to put a Bible in the classrooms around the state of Oklahoma, you run into all kinds of problems. Right? I've heard arguments on both sides of that. I've got some friends that are pastors. So I don't want idiots teaching the Bible to the kids. Okay? I say, well, yeah, I don't want idiots teaching the Bible either. We get the Bible in the classroom because the Word of God is alive and powerful. Get the Bible in there where they can at least look at it and read it. Okay, and leave it between God and them. Don't get so bent out of shape over stuff like that. But education, take control of what people read and listen to. Take control of what children learn in school. And they've been doing that for a long time. They've been doing that for a long time. When I was in high school, science class included the fact that there might be a creator. And there might be evolution. And that's the way it was presented back in the mid to late 60s, okay? But then they got into many college professors, and if you were a creationist, you didn't work there anymore. You got thrown out. So what do we see with secular humanism? We see evolutionary theory right at the heart of what they're doing. What do we see with Marxism? Same thing. Evolutionary theory. So you start putting that in there, you start putting in the presuppositions and the underlayings for everything that goes on. So education, take control of what people learn in school. But what they'd rather do is put in all kinds of stuff that we used to call porn into the schools for the kids to learn and read and follow. That's okay, but don't put a Bible in there. See the inconsistency and hypocrisy of it. The next thing is religion. Remove the belief in the God from the government and from the schools. Now, imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us only sky. Thank you, John Lennon. He just spelled out the Humanist Manifesto, is what he did. And so, take religion out. Call it the zeitgeist, the religion of the times, the spirit of the times. Zeitgeist is German word. The spirit of the times is to move away from religion. And I know people, some of them related to me, that have adopted this as their religion. The bad thing about saying there's no religion is it becomes a religion. It's inherently a matter of faith and what you believe in. So if you don't believe there's any God, oh, you have a belief system. You can't tell me you don't believe in anything because you do believe that there's nothing to believe in. So it's one of those things that when you're seeking truth, you start looking at what's right, what's wrong, and what is inherently contradictory. So it's inherently contradictory to say, I believe there's no God. No, actually, that's a truthful statement, isn't it? A person could say that. But then you have to ask, what is belief? And belief, as we've talked about over and over again, is not what you can make yourself believe, but what you believe in. Yeah. I want the one with the facts and the data. Can I see God? You know, I can't see him personally. I see the effects of everywhere he's been. That's what we see. We see the effects. We've been talking about taking down this cottonwood tree at the end of the parking lot here. Now, many of you have been around here when the cottonwood starts shedding. The cottonwoods can plug up cars. They can plug up air conditioners. They can plug up everything. And at times of the year, it looks like it's snowing out here. But, you know, if we looked at this properly, we look at it and go, God made that cottonwood tree. It is a manifestation of who he is and his glory. And he's reminding us every time we see the ground covered with snow, when it shouldn't be, God can make anything happen he wants to happen. Huh? Oh, good. Okay.
We have a closer after you
now. Oh, we do?
Yes.
I thought we did it. Okay. We got it done. And class warfare. The rich and the poor. The rich and the poor. And the middle class starts to not exist anymore. What happens in the middle class? You get them burdened with debt. You get them dependent on the government. And the next thing you know, you have a battle between the rich and the poor. And that's how you go about installing a socialist system. You can hear it now. You can hear it on the TV all the time. You can hear people, again, wanting to turn things into a socialist utopia. I can tell you, there aren't any socialist utopias. Try to find one. They have failed in all of their history. And only arrogance would say, where they failed, we can make it work. Okay? But yet, that's the way a lot of people think. Now, what they want to do with this, because socialism is a step to communism. That's what Marx and Engels laid out. So if you can get somebody into a socialist mentality, communism is the next step. If you can get the people discontent with everyone, everything, everywhere, it's easier to tax the wealthy to support the poor. Like Margaret Thatcher said, socialism's fine till you run out of other people's money. Because that's what happened. Alinsky merely simplified Lenin's original scheme for world conquest by communism under Russian rule. Stalin described his converts as useful idiots. Have you ever heard that term? The useful idiots have destroyed every nation every nation in which they have seized power and control. You want something lately? Venezuela. That's just one of them. You see, everywhere they take over, they destroy it. And it's presently happening at an alarming rate in the United States. Now, some people look at this as purely from a humanistic perspective, and you don't have to have a master group of human conspirators when you got Satan running the show. Because at its heart, communism is about making the government God and not recognizing the God who made you. That's the heart of it. So, now, the primary method used to change people thinking called brainwashing. I actually thought I'd get that far this morning, but obviously I didn't get that far. And that's why when Kelvin said, you're well trained or something like that, I thought, don't do me that way, Kelvin. That's not a toss up from a softball there. This is because one thing that we'll do is prove we're not here to brainwash you. Okay? Brainwashing is what the opposition does and how they go about doing it. So, one more hymn. Okay.